And I'm going to tell you something else. I ain't going to lie. I'm not no brave person. A lot of men here would, you know, you always see some men in the Dracula movies and the Frankenstein movies fight that monster for his woman. I ain't that guy. I ain't going to lie to you right now. If I'm with you and you're my woman and we walking down the street and Dracula's chasing us, you a dead woman. I'll trip you. Jack! Jack!
Tuesdays with Scotty are not the opinions of Scotty White, but the opinions of the lizard people who secretly rule this planet. Thank you.
You're listening to the Mobcast Network.
Wonderful town, wonderful people, places to go, things to see. My love is Mobile. That's my wonderful town. Beautiful homes, schools and churches, entertainment, places to shop. My heart's in Mobile. That's my wonderful town.
Mobcast Network presents...
Live from Stupid Mop Studios, located in Mobile, Alabama.
It's Tuesdays with Scotty.
This is the podcast about whatever the hell Scotty wants to talk about.
From pop culture to food, movies, comics, or games.
Literally whatever the hell Scotty wants to talk about.
If you don't like it,
get your own podcast.
Now here's your host, your Native American pop culture spirit guide, Scotty.
Ready, guys?
Let's do this. Leroy Dragon!
Hi, this is Scotty. This is Tuesday with Scotty. Woo! Steph's like, was trying to walk in, because we just got through doing a podcast with the amazing Richard Tyson from 3 O'Clock High and a ton of the Kindergarten Cop. He was in Black Hawk Down. He's in Battlefield Earth. I can't wait to... Just sneak on. Come on. That's why all the Path Blue Ribbon is here.
She did.
I drank one, so. It's Tuesdays with Scotty. Steph's sneaking in. Last week we had Caleb up here. Well, you are now.
Well, yeah, briefly. The intro. I did watch it, though, when he was recording it, and it's most excellent.
Yeah, thank you. Couple things. Of course, I'm your Native American pop culture spirit guide, Scotty, and we have producer Caleb over there in the back somewhere doing his producer thing. Whatever.
I'll switch. Mm-hmm. Hey. There we go.
There he goes. Steph's hanging out for the intro.
Yes, I am.
You can find us on any podcast app. Seriously, if you listen to a podcast, or if you're listening to this podcast on a podcast app, you found us. But if you're still looking for us, any podcast app will do. You can look for Tuesdays with Scotty, or you can look for Mobcast Network. And then please like and subscribe. That would be helpful. You can,
look for Mobcast Network, because then you can find all of our content.
Actually, if you subscribe to this one, it subscribes to all the content.
Does it really?
Yes, it does.
That's magic.
I am magical. See?
That's awesome.
I look out for all of us.
That's amazing.
You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/Tuesdays with Scotty. And you can see both our smiling faces and Caleb's face on YouTube at youtube.com/Mobcast Network. A couple things I would like to mention. I guested on another podcast. I cheated on Stephanie.
I know. I'm a little salty about that. Until I found out what they talked about, and then I'm not so salty.
Thanks for ruining this other podcast.
It's good. It's funny.
I was on the Jester's Court, and we talked about The Postman.
And to be honest, I've actually been watching some video clips of it on the Facebook, and it is pretty funny.
Evelyn is the host of that. He's a great guy. He's coming in to do Cult Movie Cantinas with us in a couple of weeks, and him and his lovely bride.
Oh.
They're
going to be casting couch.
They're going to be on the casting couch, and we'll be talking about Return of the Living Dead Part 1.
Yes.
And so that's going to be, they're going to be here for that. So we'll probably record that in June for July. That's the plan. But I was on his podcast, The Jester's Court, and we were talking about Kevin Costner's The Postman. Have you seen The Postman?
Oh, I did. I made the mistake to watch it one time. I have not revisited it since the one time I watched it.
So I watched it last week for the show. For the show.
And is it better the second time?
I think so. It's not an amazing film, but it's not a bad movie either. I think...
On a scale of 1 to Waterworld, where does it sit?
Oh, it's way better than Waterworld. Oh, way better. You think? Absolutely.
Because I've seen both, and they kind of are like right level to me.
Well, Waterworld has this whole weird.
I like the little girl on Waterworld.
Yeah, who was she ended up being in Napoleon Dynamite.
Right.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
Is she the one that does the glamour shots?
Yeah, she has the glamour shots, girl.
I love her so hard. So, we should do that movie.
We might. Yeah, season 4.
I know.
It's got a lot of elements of that because it's post-apocalyptic and there's no, instead of all water, there's no water, that kind of thing.
Right.
However, Dennis Hopper is ridiculous as the villain in Waterworld, and he's just kind of zany. Will Patton is generally scary because, especially today, he seems like one of those nutcases that you see on the news who could go
right.
raise an army
no,
or be a part.
You're and right.
So there's a lot of that. There is some dumb things in this movie, but and I think the movie's a little long.
So I do have to say, and this is terrible on my part, and I'm not proud to admit this. No, I'm serious, because I make judgments when I shouldn't, but it's just my like a knee jerk reaction. That's how I work. After I watched The Postman, is when I decided that I did not like Kevin Costner anymore. Seriously,
really?
And I really wouldn't watch anything with him in it. And it wasn't until a couple of months ago And yes, a couple of months ago, I know I'm way behind because I don't like Kevin Costner. I started watching, what's that show?
Yellowstone.
Mm-hmm. And okay, Kevin Costner is a fine actor, and I may have been wrong. However, The Postman is still a special kind of movie. It's all I got to say about that.
I just don't think it's as bad as people think it is. I think it was unfairly judged. And we learned this in the Titanic episode, if you remember.
Right.
So Harrison Ford, his Air Force One is coming out the same year as Titanic. And
which is a great movie, yeah, Air Force One.
And this is why you remember Air Force One over Postman, is that Postman and Air Force One are both in the same studio. Harrison Ford has enough clout that he saw what was coming. No one else saw Titanic coming like it was.
Right.
But he knows not to bet against James Cameron, so he made the studio switch the dates. So Postman was supposed to come out of the summer. It had been a fine summer epic. You know, some
Right.
And so they switched it out and put Air Force One, that and Air Force One became the hit.
I mean, yes, and I agree with you to a point, but I think The Postman was weird.
No, it is weird.
I mean, but
I think it has a better audience if it's in the right date.
It does, but the pacing is even weird, I think.
I kind of agree, but then again, I think it has a strong opening, has a soft kind of middle, and then
concept of it. The concept of it is like...
Give it another watch. It's not as bad as you think
okay.
it is.
Okay. I'm going to do it. Well, I've already, you know, admitted that Kevin Costner is not a horrible actor like I thought he was.
And it's not the worst movie I've made you watch.
Oh, that's for sure. So you were talking about that at your earlier during this podcast, yes. I think.
Yes, yes. When we talk about my top favorite horror films, we all know what my number one is.
Right. I was just like...
And our guest was like, that's a good selection.
I know. And so that's why it was...
And she is a doctor.
Yes.
She's smarter than all of us.
She teaches a class in horror, and maybe I'm just stupid, but I don't know.
You're not stupid. My kind
of horror is different.
But yeah, check us out on, check me out on Jester's Court. I'll post the link so everyone can watch it. Please go watch that or listen to it or subscribe to them. They're good podcasts. Our friends at Squirrel Circle Comics has put out the Comic Book Encyclopedia of Pro Wrestling Volume 1 and 2 live on their Kickstarter. I did the video for that.
I just signed up for a wrestling Patreon.
Oh, nice.
I did.
Look at you.
Diamond Championship Wrestling.
Oh, nice. We're going to be putting our Patreon out, I think, September.
I'm excited. Well, that's why I did it, because I feel like what you put into the universe, you'll get back.
I know that you won't. Look at that. Baby, I swear this never happened to me before. First time's ever happened to me. Look, give me about 15 minutes. It'll be all right.
All right. It's fine. You need some help?
And I'm good. I think I'm good. Just let me rest a minute. We'll get back to it.
It's fine.
It's great. That was a total visual joke. The audio podcaster has no idea what I'm doing.
None.
And I'm going to make you watch YouTube.
Yes, you need to watch YouTube.
This will not count for you. You will not understand. I don't think you'll understand, but you may surprise me. Sometimes you do. Caleb.
Yes.
Does Leroy Jenkins mean anything to you?
Oh, absolutely.
Excuse me. My cat's name is...
not Leroy Jenkins.
Oh, no. It's Othello Jenkins.
Is it Jenkins or Othello Jenkins?
That's his middle name.
So did you name him after Leroy Jenkins?
Yes, I did, actually.
Again, you amaze me. Sometimes some pop culture stuff sneaks through.
Because
this is typically... The only reason I say this is a video game thing, and as we've seen on previous episodes...
You don't
not
get
your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
No, it's not. But okay, I'm gonna full disclosure. I don't know where I got it from, but I've heard the name so many times, Leroy Jenkins, and so I have my cat, and I'm like, oh, we're naming him Othello Jenkins.
17 years ago this week, as we record, so it'll be a week prior. Mm. On the game of World of Warcraft. Mm.
I understand where I heard it from now. Yes.
And Caleb, you can keep me straight on this because you're probably closer to the zeitgeist. Did you ever play World of Warcraft?
It was not a game I got around to.
I never played it.
I had a very good friend.
But I had a lot of friends. I had a lot of friends who played it. And of course, you know, I was on YouTube a lot during that time.
Unlike now, where you're never on YouTube now.
Well, I'm actually on a break.
I am now YouTube itself.
I am on a break, so.
Oh, you're on a break.
Let me tell you how famous Caleb is. So I have an addiction now. Not an addiction. Uh-oh. I have a routine where before I go to bed, I will set my timer and I will spend a set amount of time watching TikTok videos. Because that's what I do.
Right.
So I'm sitting here watching my TikTok, and it's random. I was like, because, you know, I choose the suggested for you, not the who I'm following, because mm-hmm. I'm just trying to. So I'm just random, and I'll giggle and snort and do all my stuff, because it's, you know, fun. And who popped up in my random TikTok videos last night?
Was he talking about Star Wars?
Yes, he was.
That's what he talks about.
I know. So.
Caleb, what is your what's your TikTok?
It is Caleb Lockwood 5.
So go follow him.
I followed him.
We have one. I haven't figured out how to use it yet.
Oh, I know how to use it.
I mean, I know how to use it, but I haven't figured out what content I want.
Yeah, that's the that's been the trick.
Random stuff. It should be pictures of us and Richard Tyson. It should have been
whatever we do.
Videos of us drinking PBR and tequila. I mean, seriously, we should have done a video of us drinking tequila and PBR with Richard Tyson and put it on our
next time. We're gonna have him on this show too, so it'd be
right.
Fun.
But you know what I'm saying?
I mean, there actually is a way to get videos that you've already made and put them on TikTok, like using the footage we've got.
We should do that. Take the shot and. Get on it, Caleb.
Back to Leroy Jenkins real quick.
Yes,
go ahead. 17 years ago on the World of Warcraft, there was a party that was all together to go defeat some dragon guys, bunch of dragons. And they were like, you watch the video, and I'll share the video too, but the video is like, all right, guys, you're going to do this, and you're going to do that, and we're going to power up this way. And then one guy goes, Leroy Jenkins, and just runs into the...
Yes, I remember that.
And then just gets the total party wipe, kills them all.
Maybe I saw some. Maybe somebody posted, like, videos or some of it.
And so Leroy Jenkins, it's funny because it's like, well, thanks a lot, Leroy, because they're all upset about it.
Yeah.
At the end of it, they're like, at least I got chicken. And there is... It's the video's most likely staged because there's some test footage, you know, tests with them working it out first. Regardless of that, it's hilarious. And it came up on my news feed that it was 17 years ago, and I decided to share that. So, Leroy Jenkins, happy birthday, Leroy Jenkins.
Leroy Jenkins is as old as me and my husband's wedding.
Oh, wow. those bonds are strong. Your wedding and Leroy Jenkins.
Leroy Jenkins.
Stephanie, I, and Caleb, and Justina are going to be at MobaCon this year.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are.
We're May 28th at 8 p.m. We're going to be talking about the film Starship Troopers.
I bought a costume. It's going to be hot.
I bought a t-shirt.
Oh, I got a full outfit.
You better tell Justina, because if she comes out without an outfit.
She was in there, and her Her response was, "Oh, I guess I have to watch the movie before I order something to wear." Because she has no idea what the movie is.
I think she's seen it before, though. I think in the thread
she said. She did. She said she didn't know.
I thought in the thread she said she thought she had seen it. So
okay.
Knowing her ex-husband, she probably has seen it.
There you go.
But, yeah, so come see us at MobileCon for Starship Troopers May 28th, 8 p.m. And tomorrow on the cult movie Cantina, Stephanie and I and Caleb talk about the classic cult film 3 O'Clock High with the one and only Buddy Revell himself, Richard Tyson.
Yeah. That's right.
And he regales us with some interesting tales about his career. And it was fantastic. Had a blast. He is a
he was a hoot, was he not?
He was a trip. I love it.
It was fun.
He was had so much fun. That's us. This is the leftovers from the cold movie Cantina. That's what the beer is for.
Yeah, and well, there was a bottle of tequila too, but he took it with him because I gave it to him.
Right, because Buddy Revell deserves his tequila.
He's got to drink the tequila, man. There wasn't a lot left.
man, I am feeling it. All right, so. This week we have Dr. Ann Guzzi, who's been on our shows before.
God, yes, she has.
She is a professor at University of South Alabama teaching English and rhetoric, but she also teaches a horror class, and she is amazing and fun, and me and Ann talk for about an hour about our favorite horror films and why we like them, and I'm definitely going to have her back. Because there's so much we didn't get to cover, and I'm looking forward to it.
Right.
So we're going to go cut to that.
The kids of Elm Street don't know it yet, but something is coming to get them. Nightmare on Elm Street.
No! No!
She's the only one who can stop it. If she fails, no one will survive.
Help me! Please!
Wes Craven's Nightmare on Elm Street, rated R.
It's not often we get people to class up the joint. We have someone wonderful here to class up the joint. Dr. Ann Guzzi's here. What's up, Ann?
Hey, doing well today. Thank you.
We have a doctor here. a doctor of horror, I would say. And like a legit doctor. So your background's English, right?
Yeah, my PhD is rhetoric and professional communication. My undergrad is in communications and production stuff. So I just love horror. So I teach technical writing, freshman composition, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the stuff you gotta teach.
But I love teaching horror literature and film. It's just passion for me.
It's good stuff. It's absolutely.
Oh yeah, and I had one of the graduate students who's graduating this year with her degree in creative writing told me that before she took the horror class, she was a little scared, a little nervous about horror, but she was going to push herself. And she says now she's a freak.
What?
So mission accomplished.
Absolutely. And so that's kind of, you know, horror's job is to scare you. And so and people always are afraid to take that leap into it. And then once you realize what it is, you get that adrenaline kick anyway. It's like riding a roller coaster. You want to have, I've noticed as I've gotten older and seen a lot of things don't scare me as because you kind of get immune to a lot of things.
Yeah.
However, the stuff that freaks me out is like the Paranormal Activity stuff, the stuff where it's like it's a long shot and then maybe something moves because that's like that could happen in my house.
Yeah. As you grow up, if you're fortunate enough, grow up, grow older, you move through different phases of your life. You know, when I was a teenager, heck yeah, Freddy, Jason, Michael Myers, that all scared me because I was a teenager and they're coming after teenagers.
Right.
Now, something that scared me a lot lately, Hereditary,
right,
because it's a mom and her child and, you know, spoilers, you know, when you're suffering this kind of loss,
right,
you know, and then you get possessed. Yeah, that resonates with me. You know, so you can find things, you know, different things are scary to you at different stages in your life.
Right. And just for a warning for the rest of the show, we are going to talk horror films and there will be spoilers for all kinds of horror films. So if you've not seen things, you can always fast forward to or wait to watch and then come back and watch the show. But we're going to talk about a lot of movies today. But before we start that, I really want to get into a little bit about Little Ann. How did Little Ann get into horror?
Trilogy of Terror.
Nice.
Dan Curtis's TV movie Trilogy of Terror back in the 70s traumatized me and basically my entire generation. Karen Black was it was an anthology movie, mm-hmm. and all of the all of the pieces are written by Richard Matheson. Mm-hmm. I Am Legend.
I Am Legend.
You know, and
What Brings I Come, which is one of my favorite films.
Oh my goodness. And the episode that scared the entire country was Amelia, otherwise known as the one with the Zooty fetish doll.
Yep.
You know, where Karen Black is chased around her apartment, just like his short story, The Invader. Well, it was, I'm trying to remember the sequence of what the short story originally was, but it was the Twilight Zone episode, The Invaders. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you look at The Invaders and then you look at this episode of Trilogy of Terror, you know, it's basically the same thing. And Karen Black is chased around her apartment by this little doll, and that doll just traumatized everybody I knew and my family.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Dolls are creepy. I mean, look at like the clown thing from Poltergeist, how it traumatized the country.
And and Talkie Tina.
Oh yeah.
You know, I don't like you very much. Yeah. So, and yes, things that are supposed to be inanimate. You know, it's that wonderful joy of Toy Story. Hey, what if my toys came to life? No, this is the other side of that. Yeah, it's going to stab you to death. Right. It will kill you. Yeah.
Charles Lee Ray. I mean,
Chucky.
Chucky himself. You know, it's like, I got into horror. I like to say two ways. My earliest memory of horror, my mother was and still is a horror fan. And so she was my gateway into it. And mom was a single mother living with me when I was 4 and 5. We were living in Texas. And we had a hurricane. So we're stuck in our apartment during this tropical storm or whatever. And, CBS ran a TV cut version of The Exorcist.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I remember watching like the ending parts of like the exorcism itself. And so Reagan twisting her head and throwing up on people and floating and just the, you know, the really like I'm 5. I should not be watching this, but I'm like, and so for years, my mother like would stop and say, "Hey, Scotty," and start turning her head.
No,
like it's about to spin.
Thanks, Mom.
Freak the hell out of me. Like for years traumatized me.
My mom and dad saw Exorcist in the theater, and my dad laughed, and my mom was so mad.
But later, a couple of years later, we had moved back to Alabama, and I hear this story about the moon landing a lot, especially in this part of the country where not everyone had a television set and everyone watched the moon landing like at their neighbor's house because the one neighbor in town had the TV.
Right.
Well, we had TV back then, but no one had a VCR. And so we had the one neighbor who had the VCR. And during the summer, the families would do a cookout and rent a bunch of movies and then watch stuff. And so Mom picked Dawn of the Dead for that show.
Nice.
And so I saw the
Mom has good taste.
Yeah, and so she picked the 78 Dawn of the Dead, which scared the hell out of me, left an impression. I slept in their bed, of course, after I had nightmares.
Oh gosh, but, yeah.
But especially when like Roger is like getting up and he's like that terrible makeup gray he is, but you know, and I at 6 I just understand the horror of it, but I don't understand the tragedy of it. Later on I get to understand that that's his buddy who's going to, you know, have to do him in. That movie's beautiful. And it's a, you know, a great criticism on consumerism in the 70s, but it's like it still holds up. It still holds up.
Right. Right.
But so that's my kind of gateway into, and then that's what it starts from there. I remember seeing Funhouse, Toby Hooper's.
Oh gosh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The scariest part is the magic trick with the heart that's fake. Like, oh no, I've killed her, and it's not real. And before you even see the monster, scared the hell out of me. Terrified me.
And so something that terrified you when you were little, you know, generationally speaking. All right. So several years ago, my daughter was still a teenager, and like, oh hey, Funhouse is on. So we sat and watched Funhouse. Halfway through the movie, my kid is asleep on the couch next to me.
Right.
So, yeah, that's not scaring her. Other stuff scares her. So, yeah, the generational horror.
Right. Well, I mean, it's kind of cheesy. Now I look at it because the main female lead in that, the heroine, she's Stanzi from Amadeus. And Amadeus is one of my favorite films. So
yes.
It's like, oh, look, it's Stanzi in a horror film. And I can't get my brain out of it.
Elizabeth Barrage?
Barrage, yeah. So I was just like, I can't go. Like, it's just like, I keep going and say Wolfie and
Wolfie
and run around. But, but I love horror. So that's how I got into it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And my mom and dad were that split family of, my mom would go to the movies with my dad, and my dad would, like I said, sit in Exorcist and laugh, and she would be embarrassed in the theater. Or Alien. They went to see Alien, and my mom is screaming and covering her eyes, and my dad is just laughing. He thought that the chest burster was the funniest thing ever.
My mother hyped up Alien a lot because she saw it. So that's 79, so I was too young to see it in the theater. But she hyped it up for years, and then ABC ran it in the mid-80s. And she's like, oh, we're going to watch Alien. But Alien is such a slow burn. And that, mm-hmm. at a young age, I just couldn't get into it. It took Cameron's Aliens for me to go back and appreciate it.
Right, because mm-hmm. you don't have to have the exposition and the backstory and the origin story and that. Cameron could just jump right
into it. And so, yeah. But and what Scott's making, you know, Ridley's making this haunted house in space with a monster. That's his,
exactly.
And so mm-hmm. it's got to have that. It's great. But you know, I was 8 or so when I first saw it, and so I was like, I was really excited because it was so, you know, Age of Star Wars, so that was the space movie, and I'm all in for that. But it was like, it just took forever to get to, like, even Kane getting the thing on his face.
Yeah,
and just like
slow build.
It's like,
yeah.
45 minutes until the movie actually starts. So
it's like a kid going from Star Wars to the Star Trek the motion picture.
Right.
Yeah,
I just rewatched the motionless picture because Paramount Plus were like, it's a 4K version, it's pretty, and I'm like, sure, I'll watch it, and still.
Well, and I remember being in the toy store with that little Moviola sort of thing, the handheld thing that you could crank and watch the end of Alien. I'm like, what am I looking at?
The 1986 season premiere of SNL, it's the second year Lorne Michaels come back, but it's the first year Dana Carvey and Phil Hartman and all them. And Sigourney Weaver is the host. And they do a wonderful Aliens bit at the end of it. And so they just recreate Aliens. And, you know, they've got Carvey's playing Hudson, and Dennis Miller is Bishop, but he's like half cut in the floor. It's like, hey, what are you using? But at the end of it, like it's like, I don't know what to do. And then Sigourney Weaver's just taking off her clothes like she did in the first one. It's like, no time to take off your clothes, Ripley. And so it's one of the best bits ever. And so I got excited when Peacock's got all the SNLs. And so I went to go find that one. And it's on there, but that's cut. They've cut that out.
Really? Yeah,
so I have found a copy, and I have it on. I need to upload it on YouTube, see how long it lasts on YouTube before it gets
copyrights it.
Because it's so funny. Everybody's impressions are really, really good. And then at the end of it, the alien, because they're basically doing the 6 meters, or 6 meters, and it turns, opens up as E.T. E.T.'s come to visit.
Nice.
And they just kill him. And then they have to cover up the murder. It's just,
so that'd probably be what, 20th Century Fox copyright claim all over that.
Disney's gonna be all over, because it's Disney now. So,
oh, that's right.
Disney now.
That's why.
Disney's gonna be all over it. I mean, technically,
sorry, some things I push out of my mind.
Well, yeah, Disney owns Fox, so that technically means the Alien Queen is a Disney princess. You keep that. That's yours. You can have that.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
That's yours. I wanted to talk horror with you, and so I said, hey, I'm going to do a top 10 list of my favorites, and you were like, I can't just do that. I'm going to do lots of things, and I'm like, I'm all good. And then when we sat down, you said I want the top 10 Canadian tax shelter horror films, and I got to know that I didn't know that was a thing or a genre or a category that you just created is amazing.
Oh, no, this is well documented. Gosh, and now I'm blanking out on the title of the book. There's a really good book. It's kind of the equivalent of David J. Skull's Monster Show.
Right.
But it's about Canadian horror films. And of course, it's got something from one of the Cronenberg films on the cover. It's got the little weird blonde-haired kids from The Brood
right
on the cover. But taking it takes a chronological tour through the development of the Canadian horror industry, you know, and how, you know, starting back in the 30s and 40s with their documentary films and Canadian filmmakers and the Canadian government helping to fund the films, really wanted everything to be very, you know, patriotic about Canada and showing Canada in such good light and telling the stories of Canadian people, particularly if you were out on the prairie.
Right.
You know, those were very feel-good stories. And so they started very small independent exploitation stuff. And then you've got folks who come along like Cronenberg, you know, who was an honors student who started out as a biology major, but then became an English major at the University of Toronto, graduated with honors.
That explains The Fly a whole lot.
It does. I have so many STEM majors in my classes, you know, particularly biology and chemistry, who gravitate toward Cronenberg, and they don't quite understand why. I'm like, well, because he started out as a biology major, you know, and entomology was his thing. He did bugs.
Right.
So I'm like, yeah, that explains his, you know, that he's the master of body horror, that
Absolutely.
You've got stuff like Videodrome and Naked Lunch with the bugs and The Fly with the bugs and all of this, you know, the body horror imagery in all of his films, because he started out in biology.
He's got a new one coming out, something Future Crimes or... Hey, Caleb.
Yeah, I'm on it.
Find out Cronenberg's new ones.
World of the Future?
Something. I thought something like Future Crimes or something like that. I've seen the
or
first...
Is it Crimes of the Future?
Something like that. I saw the first trailer. The new trailer's out. I haven't seen it yet because I tend to be like on Cronenberg. It's like, I'll watch the teaser and you've got my money anyway. And yeah. So, but I hear it's like real up there.
But then in the, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, how many of some of our favorite slashers outside of, you know, the Holy Trinity of Freddy, Jason, Michael Myers, you know, how many of these things did the companies go up to film in Canada? You know, you could have a star like Jamie Lee Curtis, but as long as the majority of your people, the crew, the cast and that were Canadian, you could get these incredible tax breaks. If you would film in Toronto, Montreal, Edmonton, Vancouver, kind of like, you know, the whole Jason Takes Manhattan or X-Files being up in Vancouver,
right.
That it's that Canadian tax shelter. You could get doctors and lawyers and people to invest in your movie. So My Bloody Valentine, Terror Train, Prom Night, you know, not to mention, you know, starting a little earlier with Black Christmas,
right.
You know, in Toronto. But yeah, so many productions would go up to Canada. And then, you know, later on, not only do you have something like Wolf Cop, you know, which I think was in Regina, but Ginger Snaps. And so there's this long-standing, rich tradition of horror in Canada.
And I just mentioned to you earlier before we started, the one that came out, I saw, I want to say last year, maybe in 2020, but it was a great pandemic film, but it's Blood Quantum, and it's a First Nations horror film, and it's made by First Nations folks. And, you know, as a Native American, I'm like, oh my God, we make horror now. It's great. Yes. We just don't have to do Dances with Wolves. And so I, you know, and it's really, really good. It's one of the things that the reason why I got Shudder, actually, it's on Shudder, and Shudder's so great.
Yes. Yeah. I can watch it at home. I can watch it in my office. I frequently have something from Shudder playing during my office hours in the background.
I really like their selection of documentaries. I love Cursed Films. I think it's a great show. And
Cursed Films was where I finally saw that footage from the making of the Twilight Zone movie.
Absolutely. Yeah,
Landis's episode and Vic Morrow and the helicopter accident.
Right. They showed more than I thought they were going to show out of that.
Yeah. So, I thought that, you know, the studio would have sat on that footage forever, but no, there it was.
No. I think because it's in evidence. And so since it was used in evidence in court, you could just, you know, Public Information Act and grab it. So
yeah,
Freedom of Information Act.
Not that I'm a shill for Shudder. They're not compensating me in any way.
Yeah, they're not sponsoring the podcast.
You know,
yet.
I love Last Drive-In with Joe Bob Briggs,
yeah,
and Darcy.
Joe Bob's great.
You know, the whole curation aspect of Shudder. You know, that I appreciate what they do with him, with Eli Roth, and like you said, so many good documentaries. And there's always something new. They really support indie filmmakers, but you can also find good, you know, A-list commercial studio films.
Right. And but also you can find those, like, those slip through the cracks kind of horror film stuff, and like, or stuff that, like, the 70s and 80s stuff that doesn't, like, that were, that was on the mom and pop video store, but never at the Blockbuster.
Exactly. Exactly. Like,
and Tubi's good for that too. Tubi's full of that stuff.
So the Cronenberg film is Crimes of the Future.
Crimes of the Future.
Ding, ding, ding. We have a winner.
Winner!
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I would never have known about Hack-O-Lantern until I saw it on Joe Bob, and then I became obsessed. You know, late 80s, you know, bottom shelf.
Oh, yeah.
You know, made for $5 horror, but it just, it's so silly. But it was made with love. You can tell that somebody cared about what they were doing.
That's what I feel about Velocipastor.
Yes.
Velocipastor is ridiculous, but those folks had fun making it. And you can just, it's great because it's like 65 minutes long. It's short. It gets to the point, makes little sense, but it's fun to watch.
Yes.
And so it's, I love
Velocipastor. Or like Tammy and the T-Rex.
Tammy and the T-Rex. Yeah, yeah.
It's so stupid, but it's funny, and I have fun. Like you said, if they had fun making it, there's a pretty good chance I'm going to have fun watching it.
Right. I just showed a friend Planet Terror for the first time. She'd known it as the movie with the girl with the machine gun leg, and I'm like, oh, there's so much more to this.
Yeah.
And so, but it was fun for me, for her, it was like, when I got to the, you know, they've got that really hot kind of sex scene about to happen, and then they do the missing reel bit.
Exactly.
And then everything's on fire. And she's like, I need to know what happened. And I'm like, do you? Just know they did it, and then now everything's on fire. That's really all.
Yeah.
And so, and it was funny because she's kind of, she doesn't see a lot of films. So when the machete trailer came, the first time we ever seen Machete, she was like, did they make that? I'm like, they made two of them.
Yes.
And so I wish, I really wish Grindhouse did better, because I wish I saw more of those kind of new wave Grindhouse movies. And we saw it in the silver screen in Pensacola, because it was the closest thing to a real Grindhouse theater we had.
Well, yeah. And then Danny Trejo, anytime after that Danny Trejo has popped up in anything like Book of Boba Fett,
right,
there's my family, it's Machete.
Yeah, he's lost his name. It's just like Danny Trejo has become Machete,
because I would like to see him ride a Rancor into town with his Machete.
Yes, I would love that. Let's talk about our top 10 favorites.
Okay, because see, I could do a top 10 of top 10 lists.
I know, which I think is fabulous. But we'll go through these and talk.
Okay.
I do have a couple of honorable mentions, and look, I did my list. You know me, I'm a film guy, I'm a film buff, I love film history, and typically when I make these lists, I try to do, like, they're, you know, it's on there, it may not be my favorite, but I understand it's got a place in history.
Right there with you.
I did not do that this time. Oh. I literally went, I started to, too. I was like, you know, well, this movie's important, like, you know, like Dracula 1931, it's important.
Right.
But, like, I watched it recently, it's like an hour long, and I'm like, okay, that was Dracula. And it's like,
right.
Watched a lot of horror film when the pandemic happened. There's a lot, like, couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah,
ton of that, horror.
That's a good excuse.
That's what I say. And so I decided, like, what do I gravitate to? And kind of my criteria is, like, the higher on the list is, like, how many times during the year do I watch it? You know, some of these I've seen once, I'll see once and then not see again, or I'll see every few years. There's some, like, I have a list of, like, movies I watch, you know, like comfort movies.
Oh,
and
yeah,
there's a
heavy,
ton of
heavy rotation movies.
Right. And so this list is kind of heavy rotation list. I have a couple honorable mentions before we start. The first one is 1980s, The Changeling with George C. Scott.
And his wife, Trish Van Devere.
Trish Van Devere is in it. If you've not seen it, it is a ghost story that has no gore, no really anything, but it has one of the scariest scenes in a movie I have ever seen involving a rubber ball.
I was going to say the bouncing ball freaked everybody out.
Because it was great. And like the movie doesn't really have a satisfying ending, but it's creepy. It does great horror with just camera angles
shadows and sound effects. And I love it so much. And it's one of those ones I saw as a kid on 80s like TV, like probably on like WPMI on like a Sunday afternoon matinee. They showed you because The Changeling is like a PG movie. You can't, you know, you can show right. it. It's a PG horror film, but it's great. It's fantastic. So that's one of, on my list, though. One of my favorites. I also honorable mention, The Devil's Reign.
Oh, that John Travolta one with Shatner.
So it's John Travolta's very first film. It's William Shatner, Tom Skerritt, Ernest Borgnine, and Eddie Albert. And it's a movie about Satanists who melt. And we're going to do it on one of the podcasts eventually because it's so ridiculous. I need to share it with people. Like, other people need to see how crazy this movie is.
Yeah.
And so I love, and it's also, if you've not seen it, it's on Shudder and it's on Tubi, and they're both, it's like, it's well worth the watch. If you don't want to pay for Shudder, Tubi's free. And it's just, it's when you kill a Satanist, they melt, and it's like this bad wax, and like, They heat up the wax bodies and they just kind of, it's 74, I think. And it's, but the idea of Ernest Borgnine and like Eddie, Ernest Borgnine is like a Satanist. So like, and like a Satanist, like there's the end, he turns it like to a goat man. And so this is a man who won an Oscar for Marty. 10 years later, he's leading the Satanists and Anton LaVey is in it and just.
The 70s are crazy. Just, 70s are crazy.
It's Travolta's first film, and Shatner's doing the best. Shatner's doing post Kirk, but is like the best Shatner. It's just.
Yeah, because people think, particularly film critics, film scholars, like to think of 70s as the second golden age of film, with Coppola and Scorsese right. and Spielberg coming of age, and there was some really crazy psychedelic stuff going on too.
So. My fun fact for The Devil's Reign, though, is it was partially funded with mob money.
as were quite a few things.
Yeah, it was funny how in the '70s the mob was trying to find ways to clean up the money, but a lot of mob films are funded by the mob.
Yeah,
and just to because A, they wanted to get into Hollywood, and B, it's a good way to launder money. But it was like a cheap little horror film, and so that's how they got everybody. But yeah, Ernest Borgnine, Oscar winner, and Eddie Albert, who's a fantastic actor too. But
well, yeah, and that cheap, well, the cheap horror film, and we still have that tradition today. You can make a fairly decent horror film for very little money, and if it makes a nickel, you're going to see five more.
So, and my other honorable mention, which was hard to not put, it was on the list and off the list, and on the list and off the list, because I love this movie so much, but. I had to be honest about it. Exorcist 3.
Oh, with the scene, which is still scary. It right, still it, freaks people
right,
out.
Right, it's a good long kill scene. But not only that, but watching Brad Dourif and George C. Scott again act against each other in that it's not really an exorcism scene. It's more of an interrogation. But the way that's lit in the psychiatric room and switching out. Brad Dourif with the guy who played Father Karras in the original, and
Jason Miller.
Thank you. We've switched him out over and over again. It's so that third act of that movie is fantastic, shot, well acted, and so it's a shame that the movie doesn't do as well because it has to get through Heretic, and by the time they get to no one really was interested in Exorcist movie.
Yeah, talk about crazy stuff that happened in the 70s.
Right. Azuzu.
No.
But so I'll let you start with your number 10 and what is one of your favorites?
Okay.
Unless you have any honorable mentions, I should.
Well, cuz if we're talking about just straight up favorites?
Absolutely, just straight up favorites.
Nightmare on Elm Street. Everyone, including Freddy versus Jason, except for the Platinum Dunes one.
The remake?
Yeah. And even with that, I like the whole micro nap idea, but just Rooney Mara's lack of energy and how that killed it for me.
Saw it once in the theater and was like, I enjoyed the experience, but not enough to revisit it.
Yeah.
I thought Jackie Earle Haley was a fine Freddy.
Yes, and if he had been given better material other than hiding in a closet and coming up behind Nancy and saying boo,
right?
You know, I think he had the potential to be a good Freddy, but the material around him didn't support that. But yeah, the seven Nightmare on Elm Street movies and Freddy versus Jason, that would be like 8 of my top 10 favorites.
You know. So do you have one you particularly lean to? I mean, are you
my heart goes with the original. So Dream Warriors, I know the Nancy Thompson trilogy, if you want to call it that, of 1, 3, and then 7, New Nightmare. Those tend to be people's favorites.
So I'm like on the fence on New Nightmare. I understand where New Nightmare is going. I understand what Craven's trying to do.
Yeah, because it's meta 2 years before he paired up with Kevin Williamson for Scream.
Yeah, it's proto Scream. Mm-hmm. It's proto Scream in a heartbeat. But it's like, it doesn't do much for me. There's some neat kills in it, but at the end of the day, I'm not really compelled by Heather Langenkamp and her son. I'm just not, because I'm like,
see, that is compelling to me because, right, again, as I'm aging and I am a mother,
right?
So Heather Langenkamp with her son, and I'm kind of ready to revisit that, just like Halloween 2018,
right?
You know, Laurie Strode and her various children, you know, that resonates with me.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Because I'm not a teenager anymore. Freddy Krueger doesn't scare me. But if Freddy Krueger was coming after my kid, I sure wouldn't be drinking, you know, closet vodka or bed vodka or, you know, kitchen drawer vodka. You know, I would be a little more capable.
Nancy mom had a problem. Nancy mom couldn't deal with the fact that they murdered Freddy Krueger.
No, she couldn't. So when your mom is hiding vodka in the linen closet.
I like in one, though. I like in one, she's just like, all right, look. Okay, so you're having dreams about this guy, but he's fine. We killed him. Let me show you his glove that I've got.
That we've got in the house.
And like, this doesn't save anything to you? No, you're fine? No.
Because, okay, I am a product of the 80s. Mm-hmm. I started 7th grade. So I started junior high in the fall of 1980.
Right.
And I graduated with my bachelor's degree in the spring of 1990.
Right. Oh, yes.
So that the 80s are my adolescence.
Absolutely.
So you're doing honorable mention, my top three would be Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, which, yeah, I know is 78, but the franchise got steam in the 80s.
Yeah, right, right. Absolutely.
And then Friday the 13th. So that would be like my 1 and 1.5,
right.
And 3. Yeah. And then the rest would be Nightmare on Elm Street movies.
Well, I will say in my top 10, I do have an Elm Street, and it's probably not the one anyone else is thinking about. And I have, because it's I think it's the one that made the most money out of the original franchise.
Number four. Oh, that was the MTV one.
Right.
That was really, that was the beginning. Well, it was Alice.
Right. I love Alice. I love Alice so much.
And Lisa Wilcox is fantastic.
She's great in it. I love Alice's journey through this thing. So they get Patricia Arquette to Tuesday Night as, who's also probably the greatest name in Hollywood. I wish she had a bigger career so we could be like, and Tuesday Night. but as Kristen, and who, if you remember from 3, she's the one who can bring people into their dreams. And so they had her, that Kincaid back, and then they had Joey, the three survivors from 3.
Yes, Kincaid. Love some Kincaid.
Right. And like, they do them kind of a disservice and axe them off in the first 15 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, it had become a trope by then.
Right, but it's like you introduce these new, and these new characters are great because I like them all. I like her brother, who has the dumbest fight in horror history because they ran out of budget. There's no budget for, you know.
Exactly. So he's fighting Freddy, but Robert Englund is not there.
Right, because they can't afford it. There's no budget. And right. It's just like, so he's fighting an invisible man, which is dumb, but I loved the hell out of it as a kid. And the black girl scientist with the let's suck fish and dies of an asthma attack, and it just, the movie's bonkers. But is it the one who hates bugs, who becomes
Debbie
who becomes, I mean, those effects are still icky. I just like it just makes me queasy. And the, I've seen the making of, and
the '80s. It is prime practical effects time.
Absolutely. The moment she puts her face. So if you've not seen it, she hates bugs, and so Freddy turns her into a roach in this thing, which is probably the most disgusting. I mean, like if you're gonna go
very Kafka,
right? Very Kafka. Cronenberg, very Cronenberg too. And like Freddy puts her in a roach motel, and she can't move. It's all sticky, and she falls down, and then her face gets in, and there's all this goo, and then her face just falls off. I saw it at Atmore, Alabama at the Strand Theater with my dad. My God love my dad. My dad probably didn't like horror films, but he'd take me to all. I mean, I've seen most of my horror films in my adolescence. Of dad going, well, we're going to the movies. What do you want to see? And so, but there's something about, but watching Alice get everyone's like abilities and coming to fight Freddy at the end of that movie, just since she looks like a badass, it ends kind of silly, but it's fine.
It's Nightmare on Elm Street. Of course it's going to end silly.
I did Halloween Horror Nights the last time. I hadn't been in a long time. The last time I did, they did an Elm Street haunted house, and the each different room was a different movie.
Nice.
And when they got to four, they had the tunnel that and which was great, and had all the stained glass, and it was I was in heaven. Four is a beautiful film. I like people like one and three, and then seven. I think that's kind of the trope, and then but four is so bonkers and just fun. And I think Freddy's, and this may be to his detriment, but I think in four, Freddy becomes comedian Freddy more than anything. He's
the star.
Right. Yeah. But like all the one liners and stuff, the jokey lines that kind of get peppered in three, they're just like, oh, let's make every line a joke. And so he's and that's my only criticism of it, because it's like, how can you be scary of the comedian tapping the mic kind of stuff? By five, it's or six is,
well, and then six, it reaches, depending upon your point of view, the apex or the nadir of Freddy's one-liners.
Right.
You know, I'll get you, my pretty, and your little soul too.
Now we're playing with power.
But you know, even the worst Nightmare on Elm Street movie is fantastic. It just is for me. You know, it's comfort. It's comfort for me.
Did you get to see six in theaters?
No. I did not go to the theater by then to see Nightmare on Elm Street 6.
It's also, well, Freddy's Dead, I guess, is the final nightmare.
Right.
But I did. And
cue the narrator voice. It wasn't.
Of course not. But the best thing about that, though, the last 15 minutes is in 3D. So we had old school 3D glasses and just the whole
bit. I've got the 3D set up for it at my house.
Nice. I know they did a box set where you could do it with six.
And Alice Cooper. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Alice Cooper as his foster dad, adopted dad.
Tom Arnold and Roseanne. And the parents of Springfield, who was just like, we don't have kids, but we'll take you. I'm like, that's a grown adult you're trying to see. That ain't no child. I love it. I like Friday the 13th. I love the first one a lot. And then I don't think I resonate with it until like four. But I think because again, when you time and place when you see it, so I'm Tommy Jarvis's age.
Yeah, 4, 5, 6
is when I see when it's a Corey Feldman playing him. So I'm about the same, near the same age. So I kind of, and I like monster movies. I wish I could make masks and all that. So but for me, I love five.
It is, talk about bonkers.
I tend to like bonkers horror. But five is great.
If you go into it with the right frame of mind, if you can get over the fact that, again, you know, almost 40-year-old spoiler alert, it's not Jason.
It's not Jason at all. No.
But the side characters make the movie. Not the core group of teenagers. I mean, it's a Friday the 13th movie. Right. You're waiting for the stupid teenagers to get killed off. But all of the side characters, like Ethel and her son, Junior, are marvelous.
Riding around the motorcycle.
Oh my gosh. Oh. Who the fuck are you and what the fuck do you want? I got a bomb on me.
I like the two greaser kids trying to fix the car.
And they're totally leather daddies.
And they're just, you know, singing like, I can't remember this, but
gotta get the car started, motherfucker. Better fix the car, motherfucker.
So fourth grade, I'm doing this. Like in, outside of, you know, recess and stuff. I'm very popular.
Oh, and Demon.
Oh yeah.
Demon, who is, I think, one of the top five side characters of the entire franchise. You know, damn enchiladas. If you have not watched the YouTube clip of the remix, there is a fantastic, they disco-fied that song that he and his girlfriend Nita sing while he is in the outhouse at the trailer park. That, ooh, baby, ooh, baby.
I'm going to find it. I'll post it. I'll find it. I'll put it in the show notes.
Disco mix of that.
Oh, that's great. I like them. And then I like six because I like Zombie Jason. Zombie Jason, like I think what I like about six the most is that it opens with like, I'm gonna kill Jason. No, he's just gonna become Frankenstein.
And then you got Horshack.
Oh yeah.
You know, you got Ron Palillo. No,
yeah.
And it's the first Friday the 13th movie that actually has kids at the camp.
Right.
I mean, other than, you know, at the beginning, you've got Mrs. Voorhees' POV shot where she's walking around the camp and there's some children who are sleeping.
Right.
But then it takes until part six where you actually have camp counselors who are running the camp and kids are there.
Yep, absolutely. And then seven was made close to us here. And
oh, gosh, yeah.
So it's Jason versus Jean Grey.
Jason meets Carrie.
You're right. So, which is good. It's not a bad film. I
enjoy it. And there's still stories from what they, you know, their parties at the Grand Hotel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Legend.
Yeah, well, it was the 80s. And they had a lot of, let's say, substances that people frequently used in the 80s to keep them going all night.
Lots of cocaine.
Lots and lots. Lots.
Eight has probably my favorite kill in it. Jason Takes Manhattan. Eight, again, bonkers. But the boxing match?
Oh, yeah, with Julius.
Yeah, Julius, like...
Take your best shot.
Take your best shot. And he does, and it's, his head just goes bouncing. Oh, saw that in theaters and just howled. I love that one. And then I think Jason Goes to Hell has the best opening out of all of them.
And I did not realize that the actress who is playing the she has the long brunette hair
right.
That's running around and lures him into the big trap. That is the blonde villain's girlfriend from Roadhouse.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It took me a while to figure that out.
So I don't care for Jason Goes to Hell because after that opening gets really super, like, too bonkers for me to stick around for. However, I really want to know what led up to that. Like when like, okay, first of all, we have to admit that Jason is a real thing that we cannot kill. Mm-hmm. So we need to get the FBI and the military involved and like convince that who funds that. How's that secret project happen? How they build it without him knowing it. And just, right. I want that series. I would need that Friday the 13th series.
Well, and yeah, so many bonkers things in that with, oh gosh, the bounty hunter. Creighton Duke,
yeah.
and his cowboy hat, which I think is a direct influence on the guy with the cowboy hat in the newer Halloween movies.
Right, right.
Yeah, he's out of control, and just the character. You could tell that the director was really young.
Right,
like, yeah, these what's your actor going to get away with?
Right.
Kind of like that Marlon Brando in Island of Dr. Moreau level of, or Sean Connery in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. What can this person get away with?
Right.
So Creighton Duke, you know, he, that character is just out in the stratosphere.
It's almost like, what's his face in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2?
Dennis Hopper.
Hopper is like bonkers in that. And just like, and I'm like, I love, I mean, I'm in for it.
Oh, I'm there. In. Yeah.
Like, my favorite scene is when he's chesting out the chainsaws and just, and the hillbilly in the back going, yee-haw! I just like, they, and like, and they filmed that. And they were like, they, at the end of the day, they're like, good shot. I'm putting that in the movie.
Yes. Are you having fun?
Absolutely.
Because
absolutely.
I understand the elevated horror movement. Or the subgenre of the grief horror recently with The Babadook, you know, that gets the shout out in Scream 2. Babadook or Hereditary, Midsommar, The Witch, you know, and I have to be in a certain mood to be able to watch those.
Right.
When I'm feeling depressed, I'm going to put in something stupid like, you know, Friday the 13th Part 5.
Right, right.
And have fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I think that's absolutely a huge element for it. Because at the end of the day, it is fun to be scared. You don't have to, you don't have to live through a trauma. That's why we have horror films, so we don't have to experience this trauma. And so we can just tease it, haha, move on, and get with our own stuff. I mean, you're making me remember all kinds of other stuff too. It's funny. Oh, I should go my list.
Yeah. So back to your list.
All right. So, number 10 for me is, aforementioned, The Fly, 1986. Love that movie. Can't watch it anymore.
Why not?
It's just, there's the her giving birth to a maggot just drives me nuts. It's like, can't watch it. And I couldn't for like a long time. Like I would close my eyes for it. And the effect is terrible, but it's still just the idea gets me. Here's what bothers me now as I've gotten older. So Geena Davis leaves Jeff Goldblum after he's gone through the teleporter and gone kind of crazy. And then she's, you know, she's with the other guy for a little while. And then she finally comes back to check on him. And let's just say Jeff Goldblum, Seth Brundle, is not doing well.
No, he's not.
He's not. The progression of what's happening to him is his metamorphosis is happening in a huge speed. And, you know, he can barely walk. He is horribly, horribly disgusting. And then the first thing they talk a little bit, and then he reaches for a donut and he vomits on it. And it's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And then his ear pops off, and then she hugs him. I'm out. I'm out. I'm like, I know true love. I understand it. However, there's limits.
Yeah. Well, and that idea of, you know, so many people think, well, because Cronenberg did this remake in the 80s, that it's about AIDS. Well, it's just about disease, about watching someone you love or love.
Right.
Deteriorating physically. Absolutely. And you can't do anything about it.
And that's it's heartbreaking. It's totally heartbreaking, but I'm out. I like the ear pops off. I'm out. I mean, I'm with you for a while. The ear pops off. We're going to distance. I don't know. I just, you know, just sorry. I know, but it's smart because you take The Fly, which is a 60s. It's hokey. The original Fly is very,
help me.
It's very hokey. And then you mix it with Metamorphosis, which is the perfect fit for this. And they did I wish I could have saw it though. They did a opera version of it using the original music from both films.
Yeah.
And then they did.
Howard Shore Howard is Shore very and, operatic.
Right. And so they did a real opera with it. And so in LA back in like 11, and I wish I could have seen it, but they never toured. They just did in L.A. Because
L.A.
And I didn't have the money to fly to L.A. to watch it. I definitely like, I'm going to go watch The Fly for a day. So, yeah. Love, love, love The Fly. I even like The Fly, too. Not as much, but I, you know, Mick Garris worked on it, and I love Mick Garris.
I have some friends who had a soft spot for Eric Stoltz.
And, you know, he's not a bad Martin Brundle. Yeah. So, and Daphne Zagia as... can't think what her name was in the movie, but he does the eye thing. His eye comes out and he's like, I can see better now. Number 9 for me is Cabin in the Woods.
I saw that movie. It was called season 4 of Buffy.
It was.
which makes sense because Whedon just comes in and does all his best tropes. But again, like when I said about, I want to see the movie about them gathering to capture or kill Jason. This is that movie of this.
Yeah.
You know, the world's going to end. How do we, every year or whatever it is, this is what we do. The government gets involved. I would love to see a zombie film that's The West Wing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, this shit's happening. What's the White House doing about it? Like Aaron Sorkin doing the long walks and talks.
Yeah, and Bradley Woodford's already in it. So.
Right. See, that's what I want. So Cabin of Wood kind of fills that kind of niche for me.
Yeah, because once it shifts, because you think, okay, I'm watching a Cabin in the Woods movie. And then when it shifts, right. I'm like, oh, that's the initiative from season four of Buffy.
My number eight is Us.
Ooh, nice.
Us. I like Get Out. Don't get me wrong. Also, film down here. Mm-hmm. I like Get Out. Us, to me, is a beautiful, fragile art piece. If you think about Us too hard, it collapses. Mm-hmm. But if you just let Us exist as a film,
right?
It is fantastic. I've seen it multiple times. It gets better every time I watch it. It's got true, awesome horror elements and slasher kind of elements to it. But it is the idea of duality is interesting in it, and even though that I think the big twist is kind of telegraphed in it, but it's the way Jordan Peele films it, it's that slow pace that makes that movie just fantastic. But again, if you start thinking about like why is all these tunnels around and what are they doing, hands across them, don't think about it. Just
let this exist.
And you'll understand why this is a beautiful film. And so I can't wait for Nope. I mean, Jordan Peele has all my money. Almost lost it though with the Twilight Zone. I was not happy with his Twilight Zone. I'm a Twilight Zone fan. It just didn't work for me. And so it's a little.
And I don't know if enjoy is the right word, but I had deep appreciation for what he and Nia DeLonga did with Candyman.
Right.
It wasn't just a rote remake. You know, it had something new to contribute to the story.
Right.
So, yeah, I look forward to seeing what Jordan Peele will do,
right,
like with Nope and in the future of his career.
We loved Candyman. Because I went in Candyman thinking it was a remake. And got something so much better, and this kind of soft reboot, but a reimagination, but it's connected.
Yes, and that it's connected, but it has something to say,
right?
And you know, just my quick disclaimer for all of the fans who you know get onto the boards and say, "Ew, I just want to watch horror. I don't need some commentary." Then you haven't been paying attention.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely.
Horror from the beginning has always been about commentary. Yeah.
Yes. George Romero's entire oeuvre was social commentary.
Oeuvre.
Oh, sorry. His body of work.
I didn't know. I know. I just, again, she adds class to the show. She should have you more often just to add class to join up. It's great. Let's see. I don't have paper. I have a technology. And it is, number seven is from Japan, Audition.
Oh my gosh. Talk about stuff that just the slow burn.
What I like about Audition is that we watched it. Me and my buddy Josh watched it when we were trying to make movies. And so, instead of going to film school the first time, we watched a bunch of horror and used that as our film school. And we watched them. And so we watched all kinds of horror from there. And Audition kind of came up on the list. And so we started watching Audition. And we watched it knowing it's a horror film, but the slow burn of it makes you forget it's a horror film. It's this weird kind of romance story that's kind of going sideways. And it's to the point where like the director and the storyteller tell you, they like pick you up like an infant and cradle you and say, everything's going to be okay. And then the third act happens. It drops you and stops on your head.
To paraphrase Home Alone, if Rob Zombie says it's bad, it must be pretty bad.
Right, right. And it's just
yeah, it. Yeah, and this was one of those that we watched together as a family. So it's my spouse and my child who just turned 20 this year. So a lot of her teenage years spent watching horror films. And the whole family is just like, oh no, what's going to happen to that puppy? Because we know what's going to happen to that puppy. It's just when.
Right.
Oh, you have a son. Okay. When is that something going to happen? And that, yeah, the whole tiki, 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 tiki.
No.
Like, stop.
That's the two. But like, the creepiest stuff for me is like, they'll do these long shots of and follow the guy in his everyday life. And then they cut to her. And there's like a dude in a bag in the background.
Yeah, and when she vomits in the bowl and feeds it to him, and you're like,
she really did that. They're like, she's method. I'm like, there's method, and there's, you don't have to do that, honey.
Yeah.
But like, there's a dude in the bag, and like, and that's not really explained.
And because, you know, and again, you know, we're raised on all of these classic slashers. And then here is this very delicate woman. And it's a great commentary on, you know, gender relations in Japan.
Right, right.
You know, because they got some messed up stuff going on there, too.
Absolutely.
It's, we don't corner the market on having messed up gender relations. But when she has the piano wire and she's sawing through the guy's ankle and she's just like, hee, 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 hee. I'm like, no. No,
that's why it's terrifying, because you're just like, yeah. Oh,
it's not running like and chasing and yelling.
You can feel that in your teeth.
Yeah, this could really happen. And she seems so very delicate and feminine and reserved. And she has these very delicate weapons, you know, the needles that she's putting in the dude's eye,
right?
The hypodermics, the wires. You know, everything is so very delicate, but then she's got that rubber apron on,
right,
or the leather apron, and you're like, oh, she's getting ready to do the wet work now.
Right, right. Moving on from that. Because it's creepy. We're just like, But it had to make my list because it makes me feel that way.
And if you are one of those people who doesn't like to read subtitles, I mean, you don't really need subtitles for that. It translates to any people.
Number six for me is Slither.
Ooh.
Not a fan?
You know, the whole things crawling into your orifices, I'm just not a big fan of.
I understand.
It's not one of my, but I mean, Nathan Fillion, you know,
right,
can't go wrong with that.
So I like how James Gunn goes, I like Night of the Creeps. Let's make the, and that's his homage to that.
I have mad affection for Night of the Creeps.
Because it's good. It's solid. It's a great movie. Absolutely fantastic. And so it's very much Night of the Creeps at its core, and it's just twisted on its head.
Yeah.
But just but the end where the guy's just the giant blob, and just like, oh, it's just, that's fun though. And again, it's one of those movies where you think everyone had a blast on that set. That had to be a fun set to be on. And just, and it's on the short list for us to do on the podcast.
I admire the spirit.
Absolutely.
I admire the filmmaking spirit. It just, I don't want to be in the bathtub and think about things going in my orifices.
No, you'd rather just have the claw come up and.
Yeah.
That's the only two bathroom scenes I got. Bathtub scenes of Nancy and the Slither thing. Number five for me is one of your favorite franchises, Halloween 4. Again, when I first saw 4, I'm Jamie's age.
Yeah.
So just like you, when slashers are coming after teenage girls, oh my God, Michael Myers is killing children. And it's like, I'm a child.
Yeah, he's going to come get you.
He could totally get me.
See, that, you know, and one of the reasons Michael Myers is not my number one, you know, he's like my 1.5, because he kills dogs.
Right. He has a whole list of killing dogs, too. It's like,
we went over that in that Halloween 4
right,
episode.
So, right. Poor Sunday.
You know, I'm like, no, dogs, run away.
But again, like for me, when I saw it on home video and, you know, 10, I had to have been 10 when it came. I think it's 87 came in, or 88 or 88, 89. And Donald Pleasance is absolutely wonderful in it.
Yes, he's not completely crazy, but it's like that midline crazy between part one and part 5, 6.
Right. I love when he is like, gets picked up as when he's hitchhiking and gets picked up by the religious guy. And
that's
a great scene. It's just like, they're both chewing up scenery, and it's just so fun to watch. And then,
And it's kind of out of place in this film, but it works so well.
And then Ellie Cornell as Rachel Carruthers, Rachel, the foster sister who is a really strong final girl.
Absolutely. And again, they do her disservice in 5.
Of course. But she and Danielle Harris had such good chemistry.
Absolutely.
As the older sister, younger foster sister, you know, you could, their relationship was believable.
Absolutely. I like the, what leads to my everything is, you know, Rachel wants to go on this date and it's like, she's not really my sister at all. And then poor Jamie is in the back and she hears everything and just ruins the, you know, oh man, that movie's great. And the kills are fun. And
Well, you know, more K&B.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
How much K&B have we, you know, we haven't mentioned them before, but yeah, how much K&B has been in our discussion so far?
So much.
Yeah.
Mentioned this before. And my number 4 is Dawn of the Dead. Again, just a, it's my favorite Romero film. It's again, you'll get me in a movie if your opening is great. I mean, I love this chaotic thing, you know, in the TV stage, because as we're learning, I like the behind the scenes of a tragedy story.
Yeah.
And again, because like I said, that's why I want the West Wing zombie story, which we haven't got, and I guess the only way I'm gonna do it, I have to write it, but I want that. We get the world is collapsing, and this is how local television is handling it, and they're handling it poorly.
Yeah,
because they're not getting information because there's no internet, so they can't get it as fast as they want to. So I think in the remake and in Snyder's remake, there's a great homage to that in the DVD. Extras where they have a news report that's going on during the crisis, and it ends where kind of the same way the movie does, and so it's a really good kind of parallel to it. But you know, they go get a helicopter and pick up a guy, and oh well, his buddy's coming too, and this assault on this tenant house because they're trying to get him to evacuate.
Talk about social commentary.
Absolutely. And the one guy going crazy because he's just racist.
Because again, if you don't think that Romero's entire career was based on social commentary,
then you're watching
You know, yeah, I like a zombie movie, yeah, watch it,
right?
You know, okay, it does operate on levels, so if you just want to watch these things as zombie movies, right, fine, but if you want to get a little something extra out of it, it's there. But it's not subtext, it's text.
But I think that's what I like about it in a lot of these films too, because they're good to watch in different phases of your life. So there's a point in when I'm younger, I'm in it for the action movie and zombie stuff. And then as I get older and I learn about the world and stuff, I start seeing the commentary that kind of slip through.
Yeah, and again, the political science majors and criminal justice, like the social sciences majors in my horror class, tend to be drawn toward Romero. I had a political science major who accidentally signed. He's like, well, I don't know anybody else, and there's a slot open on the sign-in sheet for the Romero one. I'm like, dude, you just picked the perfect director for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And he finished the presentation with his group, and he looks at me like, yeah. It was all about, you know, socioeconomics and all of these different, whatever was going on, like Night of the Living Dead, every major conflict in this country was in that farmhouse.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, or Day of the Dead with the military industrial complex, all of these things, if you look for it, it's there.
And then even with land is all about consumerism as well as the wealth disparity go, because you've got the people living in the ivory towers who won't let people in.
I want to shout out to the George A. Romero Foundation.
Absolutely.
In Pittsburgh, all of these entities work in concert. There's the Horror Studies program and the archive at the University of Pittsburgh Library, where, you know, Romero and his widow now put all of his ephemera, all of his archival stuff, and then other people are donating their materials there as well. The Garf Network, the folks who are putting on, you know, podcasts and these reunion shows and that. It is fantastic that they're able to.
They were just in the news.
To go in and pull all of these materials and have great programming that's free online, you know, going into Romero's unproduced scripts, or, you know, they just showed, had the premiere of Jacaranda Joe, you know, what was considered a lost project. They had reunions with Knight Riders like last year for the 40th anniversary. They got Ed Harris, you know, to come in and do a reunion with them. So when you talk about Romero now, you know, the great scholarly and, you know, entertainment based stuff that they're doing out of Pittsburgh right now, it's incredible.
I'm trying to look up there was something, one of Romero's films is going up for auction, but it's an early cut of it, and the foundation tried to grab it, and just the buyer wouldn't sell it to the founder or give it to the foundation. So the foundation's reaching out, trying to hope that whoever does buy it at least gets there, because they can restore it.
Yeah.
They've got the means and the funds to restore it. And so I cannot remember what the film was. Hey,
already on it.
Thank you.
That's why we have a good producer. Thank you, Caleb. Check the George Romero Foundation's webpage. I read the press release on it. I can't remember what the film was.
It's his 1973 feature, The Amusement Park.
No, it's not. This one's new.
That one we did watch last year.
This is new.
I watched it, and it was sad.
I
found it. Yep. Here we go.
All right.
No, wait. Hold on. That's last year. I see one for last year. That's not that one.
It's gonna bug me. I'll have to find it.
I can't find one for this year.
Oh, you know what? I think I have the foundation on
Facebook.
Here we
go. Here we go. Foundation. Elegy.
Maybe.
Okay.
Let's see. I've got the foundation on Facebook.
Yeah.
No, it's Martin.
Oh, Martin.
An early cut of Martin.
Yeah, so it's Martin. Here it goes. This is from the statement from the George A. Romero Foundation. Many of our fans, followers, and supporters have reached out to us about a print of Martin that's currently for sale. We truly appreciate the concern and diligence, so thank you. The George A. Romero Foundation has reached out to the seller's agent to discuss its acquisition. At the time, it appears that the print will be sold to an individual buyer. The GARF has also been in contact with those involved with the production of the film to determine exactly what this print may be. This print is a slop print that is a black and white spliceless duplication of the work print used to make corrections in the sound mix.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So this print was purposely produced for exhibited at a theater in New Jersey, so the production company could apply for funding for completion and eventual distribution. The print has made its way to its current owners through a location scouting process for Dawn of the Dead. Regardless of physical ownership, the print may not be exhibited, as the intellectual property is owned by New Amsterdam Entertainment. But that's easy to you can schedule that. You can pay them, really. This cut of Martin does, however, have intrinsic scholarly value, and it's our hopes that the print may ultimately be installed within the University of Pittsburgh Library Systems. A George A. Romero archival collection. The print needs to be properly transferred so it can be viewed without the risk of destruction. The celluloid itself then needs to be meticulously preserved. The ULS has both the capacity and desire to do so. So we sincerely hope that the buyer will consider donating the film to the collection so it may be added to the enormous body of work already there. So yeah, Martin, I thought it was something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, that happened Tuesday as of this recording. So I know things. I'm smart. I feel like Fredo.
I'm smart.
I know things.
I'm not like dumb.
I'm not dumb. Yes, Fredo. Fredo, go get the car. Godfather 2 is great. My number three, near and dear to my heart, Phantasm 2.
Oh, gosh.
Phantasm 2, The Search for More Money. Phantasm 2 proves that I like
that
Phantasm.
That Mike is not Mike, but James LaGrosse.
It's just a good Mike. It's a good Mike. And Reggie's always going to just be Reggie in everything he does. He's just going to be an ice cream guy.
And I love how, you know, Joe Bob did a Phantasm. He showed the other four movies. He didn't show Phantasm 2.
Because Universal owns the rights to
it. Right, exactly. Because he made it, he was making the big joke about, oh, it's because they blow the CUDA up and I'm not showing that. It's just because it's a different studio.
Right,
so
right.
Yeah, and, what do you get the rights for?
Universal's been real difficult about, until last year or the year before last, because we couldn't get a complete box set in this country.
Exactly.
Because you couldn't get two. And you could get a foreign cut. There's a beautiful foreign DVD set of The Sphere. It's got all of them in it. It's in it, but it's in a sphere, and or a sentinel if you're like a true fan. So, I like that movie. So again, Bonkers is this thing for me. But look, you've got undead killer Jawas. You've got a guy who makes a four barrel shotgun that he uses
Heck
once.
Yeah.
You have a chainsaw fight. You have these awesome silver weapons that are, and then on top of that, you get the tall man who really doesn't do anything but terrify.
Oh yeah.
Oh
yeah. Yeah. And see, with the original, I was still in elementary school.
Right.
I was in fifth grade.
Right.
I was in fifth grade and I was,
and Joey's like that age too.
Yeah.
There?
I was spending the night at a friend's house after our school carnival and the Phantasm commercial came on TV and I was messed up after that. And I can't remember. I think it was that summer that one of my friends who actually saw it in the theater, because there was no way my mom and dad were letting me see anything like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the 70s, late 70s. So, you know, nobody in my socioeconomic bracket had cable or a VCR at that point. So the only way I would have been able to see it was in the theater. No way. But one of my friends did see it. And I didn't realize it at the time, but I can look back on it as an adult that he made up this story about some weird things going on at this funeral home that was a few blocks away from where we live. And so if you can imagine, it was sort of like Goonies meets Phantasm. It was the summer and a bunch of elementary school kids on our bikes riding around this funeral home. Yeah, you know, and looking for like weird stuff in the trash.
I would watch the hell out of that.
I can look back on it as an adult. I'm like, that was totally because Mike had seen Phantasm as projecting something onto this funeral home by our house.
Absolutely.
So I have fantastic feelings about the Phantasm franchise.
That's very Goonies with Stand By Me.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, you should write that. That should be like Stranger Things 2 to 5. I'd watch the hell out of it. Kids on bikes with Phantasm. That's what we're missing. Phantasm missing kid on
well,
bikes.
Because and Michael,
they tried to put a kid in 3.
Well, and Michael Baldwin was he was in his early teens.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, so it's basically that. He's not his older brother who is with the lady in lavender.
Right.
You know, and that's my favorite scene from the original when Mike is running through the cemetery and Jody looks up and he's got her panties in his teeth.
Right.
But, you know, then in Phantasm 2, back to your list, that's the one with Kemi.
Right, Kemi.
You know,
who's
and
Alchemy is her name.
Yes.
Alchemy.
So Kemi, and she's given Reggie quite the ride.
Well, she's riding him. I guess there's that. While the other couple are realizing they can speak telepathically.
Yes.
Which is less sexy. Or more sexy, depending on how you look at it. That's the one right after that they blow up the animal or whatever, because they had the grenade in the door.
Yeah.
And so they're like, they're not sure what it did. The scariest thing for my favorite thing in that movie is the thing with the priest. When after he stabs the guy, and he's in his house and he's drinking and he's shaking and everything. Yeah. God damn this wind. It's so good. And then when he goes into the mausoleum and looking, you know, he's trying to absolve everybody, you know, bless everybody.
Yeah.
You think when you die, you go to heaven.
You come to us.
Oh, tall man's great.
Angus Scrimm.
We love Angus.
Angus Scrimm's
fantastic. Oh, absolutely. Love it. Number 2, Return of the Living Dead.
You mean the movie lied?
The movie lied? I watched this movie often, like it's a comfort movie for me, like 4 times a year at least.
Oh gosh, Clue Gulager?
Oh, again,
openings. That opening of this film is amazing and great. And like, I can relate to everybody. I've been in those shitty jobs. And just
if between the people in the facility and then the punks, that kind of punky mix.
So I have
people.
A question. We're doing Night of Living Dead on Return of the Living Dead on Cult Movie Cantina this season. And my plan is to release it on July 3rd. So it happens on the, you know, when we release the podcast on the day. But my question for you is, why is Tina hanging out with any of those people?
I don't know.
Is she rebelling against Daddy? Or there's a story there that we never get.
Well, yeah. And then she also gets the dolly counter zoom. It's like, why?
I love that movie. I love that. I think the effects are great. I like the Tar Man still holds up.
Yeah. And the whole, you know, Tony Gardner half body on the slab.
Yeah.
It makes the pain go away.
And they're like, it hurts to be dead. And that, as a young child, that just terrifies you. It's like, wait a minute. I thought it was peaceful. It's not.
Yeah.
And you're like, there's a point in your life when you watch these movies and you don't realize that they're movies. And so these thoughts get in your brain. And that was one that always sticks with me.
And
so,
then Miguel A. Nunez Jr.
Yeah, again.
And.
I mentioned.
And Linnea Quigley. Linnea.
Who's coming to Pensacon. Yeah, she's coming to Pensacon for in February. So I can't wait.
Yay.
And so, that movie's not only amazing and like, it's almost perfect. It's campy in the right way. It's got good scares. It's got a fantastic story. But on top of that, an amazing soundtrack.
Gosh, yeah.
I'm just fan like.
Well, a talk of and the Walking Dead pandemic episodes when it was just the character study of Negan and his
right.
wife. So when Lucille gets in the car and she's listening to the song from Return of the Living Dead.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. And my number one, and it's everyone who knows the show and knows the other shows will know what my number one is. My number one is John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. Yeah. And it talk about things, you know, some of the films that he did in the 80s that didn't have a great critical reception. So worth not just reexamination, but they're so popular now.
Right. So, you know, you've got Big Trouble in Little China. It's his attempt to do a real big studio film. He has so many problems going into it that it was doomed to failure from the beginning.
Yeah.
Still fantastic film.
Yes, because Jack Burton doesn't realize he's the sidekick.
Right, which is the best part of that movie. It's just like it's not his film. Then, but he's got this deal with Universal that he kind of finagles into, can I make three movies? You can make three movies with this budget. And we don't care what they are, but they can't be over this amount of money. And so that becomes Prince's Darkness and They Live. And then what's the after They Live? There's one more, and it's before he does his Parts of Body Bags before it becomes Memoirs of an Invisible Man. That's the second studio gym. But Prince of Darkness for me.
Alice Cooper.
Alice Cooper, who I met and got to talk to him about Prince of Darkness last year. It was great.
And Donald Pleasance.
Donald, again, who's just chewy. Watching him and he played Brock, Professor Brock. Victor Wong.
Yes.
Just discuss God and science and just chew up that series. Yeah. Like the you know, what he's asking about dreams is like your God doesn't have access to my subconscious. And I'm just like, oh.
Yeah. And the diverse cast before it didn't feel forced.
No.
It was just who are the best actors for the part? Who do I want to work with again?
Who's affordable?
Yeah. You know, and if you
got a budget of like $3 million to make this movie,
if you look back on it now, it's like, wow, you know,
it was
just a group of people that you could imagine working together.
Carpenter did an interview pre-pandemic, and I guess this got cut during the pandemic. But one of his interviews before the pandemic, when he was on tour doing the concert tour with all his music, him
right,
and Cody,
that I see back there.
Yeah. Great. Him and Cody were doing, and he talks about like, oh yeah, the Prince of Shudder's making a Prince of Darkness show, and I'm like, yes, please, because I want to see. Do you keep it in the 80s or do you update it, and how do you update it? And do you tell the future story? I like it because it's mixed in so much like timelines and the dreams that are actually transmissions, and it's got it. I mean, it's part of his apocalypse trilogy because you know it's one of the three films that we don't win,
right?
And so that's compelling to me. The first time I saw it was in high school, and the first time I've seen a movie where you didn't win, and just stuck like Hirsch flying out at the end of that movie is terrifying.
Yeah,
it's just terrible because it's like all this was for naught. It's not because she's scary; it's you've lost. And yeah. It's like, what now? Well, you're fucked. That's now. That's and
yeah.
Credits. And so it's, I love it. I love it so much. So that's my top 10. So, we have to have you back because there's so much stuff I want to talk about. Because you talk about Freddy, I wish we had more time because I really want to get into like, you know, Freddy's Nightmares is on Tubi.
Yeah, let me catch up with it on Tubi. And see, I'm old. I don't mind having a commercial here or there. Right. Not 17 commercials before you get to
right.
the
but,
show. But
I really yeah. would like to talk about, and I wish we had time for this one, but I'd like to talk about a horror television show because being an 80s kid like you were, but like, you know, not only Freddy's Nightmares, but Tales from the Dark Side and
the Friday the 13th series, which was a totally different creature.
Right. But it's still interesting in its own right.
You know, the possessed objects.
Monsters. I'm a huge fan of the 1985 Twilight Zone, which is
oh my gosh. Yeah.
Cause there's so much horror in that.
Whether a lot of people's favorite episode there is Grandma.
Oh yeah.
Not Grandma. Strike that. Nightcrawlers. I'm thinking of Grandma because that freaked me out.
No, Grandma Street.
But yeah, that you've got Wes Craven directing television.
Right. Yeah. And Harlan Ellison wrote most of them and just, it is solid. We'll have to come back. We'll definitely come back and come back and we'll talk. Whole day of TV, like horror TV would be great because there's much. Thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you.
This was so much fun. I will talk. Like I said, we could do this all day. Seriously. So thank you very much, Ann.
All right.
Cool. We're out. Oh, that was so much fun.
I've got a message for you.
This is the shape of fear.
You're not going to like it.
This is the color of hell.
What is it?
And this is the power of the Prince of Darkness. From John Carpenter, director of Halloween. A vision of the most powerful evil of all. Prince of Darkness.
Where are you?
Rated R. Starts Friday at theaters everywhere.
And that was Anne. Yay.
Yay. Yes.
Steph is confused.
I wasn't confused. I was actually here, and that was like...
No, just because the quick cut we did.
Oh, yeah. I was confused by that, but I went with it.
Yeah, because you're good. You're professional.
Yep. Thank you. You're professional. I'm just like... I'm turning 50. My mind isn't as sharp as
you're
it used to be.
You're going to Disney?
I'm going to Disney. Yeah. That's why today I'm not wearing my tiara because I'm a countess. I'm wearing a tiara because I'm a pretty, pretty birthday princess.
I'm
going to Disney. So
you should shoot us a video when we record next, when you're out next week.
Oh, I'm going to shoot all kinds of videos.
It's just something for us for what we can put in the podcast.
Yeah, I will. My plan is to, when I build my lightsaber, to video that for sure.
Oh, cool.
Nice. But other stuff too.
She'll be a Jedi princess.
Excuse me?
Sorry, a Sith princess.
That's what I was saying. Watch your language, sir.
Yes, ma'am. I sometimes forget who I'm talking to.
I'm like, watch your language.
She is pretty much evil incarnate.
Thank you.
And on our show.
I was like, a what? You want me to what?
No, yes, ma'am. I know. I know. But sorry. I've been drinking. So there's that. And you know I don't drink. So this has been like.
Yeah.
I was surprised you drank today.
I was going to be rude to Buddy Riddell. I mean, I don't need Buddy Riddell to call me a pussy.
Right. And I still have like those text messages from him earlier where he was like, well, if you want to do a pussy shot, you can come up with something other than tequila. And I'm like, oh, hell no.
Right.
We're doing tequila.
And we did. And boy, and did we do tequila. I'm going to take a nap is what I'm going to do. This is Sky saying this is our contribution to the multiverse. Go out and make yours.
Bye. Woo.